Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Harriet.
Good evening. My name is Catherine Ellis and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Geelong Regional Libraries. And I'm really thrilled to welcome you all to this event this evening at the Geelong Library and Heritage Centre. Can I please ask you to check your phones? They're on silent and I'll be back when I get into my seat with my phone. And to commence this evening, the first thing I want to do is to acknowledge the Wadawurrung, traditional owners of this land, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who are part of the Geelong region's community today. I also want to take this opportunity to let you know that the Geelong Regional Library Corporation is proudly supporting the historic work of the Victorian Treaty Advancement Commission by hosting a voting station for the First Peoples Assembly Victoria election here at the Geelong Library and Heritage Centre. The voting station will be located on the ground floor and will be open for voting from the 30th of September to the 11th of October. So we're really thrilled to be part of that. And you can find out more at the First Peoples vic.org website. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce this evening's special guest, Fable Parrott. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
She's here not only to talk about, but to launch her new novel, There Was Still Love. Fable's first novel, the highly acclaimed Past the Shallows, was released in 2011. It was shortlisted for the prestigious Miles Franklin Award and won the Dobby Literary Award. Fable also won the Australian Book Industry Awards Newcomer of the Year Award in 2012. Fantastic. Her second novel, When the Night Comes, was also critically acclaimed and further consolidated Fable's reputation as an outstanding storyteller. And I'd like to attest to that tonight by letting you know, I'll give you my two cents, that I read the first two books. Beautifully written, highly evocative and incredibly moving. I can't recommend them highly enough. So I'm looking forward to reading this third one. Fable's highly anticipated third novel, There Was Still Love, is a beautifully crafted love letter to the strong women who bind families together, despite dislocation and distance. And now Fable's going to actually be joined in conversation by John Bartlett, a great friend of the library. Lovely to see you. John is the author of three novels, Towards a Distant Sea, Estuary, and Jack Ferryman, Reluctant Private Investigator, as well as All Mortal Flesh, a collection of short stories, and A Tiny and Brilliant Light, his published non-fiction. John's poetry has been published in a number of Australian and international journals. His collection of poetry, The Arms of Men, was launched in June, this past June, right here at the Geelong Library. We were thrilled to be part of that too. And in 2020, this is news to me, which is wonderful, Given Dara Press is going to publish a full collection of his poetry, so we're looking forward to maybe even launching that. What do you think?
Maybe.
So without further ado, please join me in warmly welcoming Fable and John.
Thanks so much, Cathy, and a good place to start, I think, is the description that you just gave for Fable's book, describing it as a love letter to women who bind families together. These two sisters, twin sisters, Eva and Mana, hold families together. It's also a family divided at the same time by geography and politics. I wanted to sort of put you on the spot, perhaps, to start with, thinking about your other two books and this book. And I know how writers hate to be put into boxes and labelled, but we readers like to do it, I guess. So I was just wondering whether you'd say that this book has more of a memoir or is much more personal than your other. I know you've described it as a fiction novel, but it seemed to me like it had lots of elements of memoir in it. Much more personal book, or is that true or not?
It is a personal book. This book came to me in a strange way. I was lost in a massive shopping mall called Northlands. I've been there. I couldn't find the exit. And instead I was standing in front of this European deli. I went inside, there's lots of shelves of different jars of pickled things, and suddenly there was a jar of Czechoslovakian gherkins that I haven't seen since I was 10. And I rang my brother and he said, buy them all. They had 6 jars. And they were $3.99 each, they were dusty. I eventually found the exit, got to my car, I opened up a warm jar of gherkins and ate one, and instantly just started to weep, like really cry. The sense memory was so strong of my grandparents' flat and lunch with them, which always had a gherkin on the side of the plate, one for me, one for grandma, and one for grandpa. And I would have given anything to drive to that flat and for them to be there. And I couldn't, they were gone, they're gone. So I drove to Faulkner Cemetery instead, where they're buried, and I sat with them. And I hadn't been there for over a decade. And firstly, I said sorry. I said sorry because I don't know anything about their lives before I was born. Hardly anything. They didn't speak about themselves, but I didn't ask either. And that's being a child and being a teenager, we're completely self-absorbed. But now I want to know everything. And so I just said, please, I want to know everything. I want you to be with me. I thought it was going to be a short story about gherkins. And it just kept going, and there were so many gaps I had to fill in. So yes, it is fiction, but how I feel about my grandparents is very real, and they are real. Mm-hmm. My memories are in this book. My cousin's memories are in this book, but there's so much I completely made up. So it's both. Probably like all of my memories, because When the Night Comes has a lot of me in it as well.
You mentioned the gherkins, and it sort of reminds me that there's so much food in this story, and which to me illustrates the fact it's such a sensual novel. I mean, it's not just about seeing things and hearing things, but the taste is very much there too.
My grandma was an incredible cook, so for some reason she had to leave Czechoslovakia just before the war, and it's a secret, nobody knows, and she had to leave her sister behind and her family. And she worked as a maid in London during the war, during the Blitz, and she became a very good cook at that time. Mm-hmm. And then she brought it to Australia, and she only cooked Czech food, but with the skills of having been a cook for so long. So all of her food was covered in butter, and she could make carrots taste amazing with honey and butter and salt. Not healthy. A Czech salad is cream and cucumber. That's a salad.
Yeah, you were talking about the cucumber and cream before. It sounds delicious.
Yeah, it is delicious.
Now, I wanted to also ask about the narrators of these stories, because there's lots of stories in here. So basically, the main narrators are children, one in Melbourne and one in Prague, and they're cousins. That's Ludek in Prague and Mala Liska, otherwise known as Little Fox in Melbourne. I was wondering why you chose children. I know in your other novels too, the voices of the narrators are children. Why did you choose children? Was it because their voices were perhaps less biased? They're very discerning, and they look at everything and they judge everything. But is it because children perhaps are a bit less biased or a bit more open?
Yeah, I think it started because I was remembering how I was remembering watching my grandparents when I was young and being with them and playing cards with them and my grandpa smoking his pipe. And so I already had that view of being 5 or 6 and with these people. So that's how it began. But I also think I'm fascinated by the children are constantly trying to work out what adults are doing. Mm-hmm. So there's so much stuff going on. They're picking up on energies and all sorts of things, but they're not quite sure exactly on the details. But yeah, they're also at adults' mercy. They have to move where their parents or grandparents move. They have to live with the decisions that their parents make.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no power. So it's a very interesting way to write. There's a lot of problems that you come up against, but I find that really exciting.
I was wondering too, it was a little bit about, as they grow, the children, they gradually find out other things, which is quite an interesting technique in a novel, because we, the reader, then find out these things gradually too. We're sort of, you know, wanting to know more, and as the children grow and find out more, we also find out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a slow reveal rather than just having all the facts.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about Ludek, the cousin in Prague. His most incredible character. He's so endearing. He's, I think at one stage he's described, he runs everywhere. He's just so full of life, and he does all these incredible things. He speaks to statues, he calls them all by nickname. He's all over the place and full of life. There's a bit of a sadness to him, but where did he come from? Apparently he's the highlight book for me.
Same for me. He was a joy to write. So he is based on my cousin. However, I have to say that my cousin never ran around trying to catch lovers in the park like
that's
he
right.
never. It's his favourite thing to try and find people smooching in the corners and down laneways. But my cousin did have this freedom in Prague, as much as there was a lack of freedom for the adults in his life. Children had a pretty good amount of freedom. No one locked their doors. Everybody went around outside, and my cousin used to just run around Prague, literally, and nobody knew where he was.
Yeah.
He loved it. So his energy is great. I love playing with him.
And he loves his food too. He's incredible about the food, isn't
he?
Does. Yeah, yeah.
But
he's always looking at another piece
like
of cake.
that's a universal. Chips and cake.
Another, but there's other sides to him too. There's that relationship he has with the neighbour, Mrs. Blasa, I think, which, you know, he starts up being a bit like a grumpy old man with her, really. But then things sort of change. He develops a very sort of concerned and tender sort of relationship with her, doesn't he?
He's got a real kindness to him that my cousin had. My cousin's whole world was his grandma, so that was his main carer because his father had died and his mum was touring with a theatre company around the world. So he lived with his grandma. So he's got he understands how important grandmas are.
Mm-hmm.
Grandmas are the heroes of this book, the heroines. Not only in my life, but I feel like Eastern Europe was run by grandmas, run by bubbies. And the reason being, all adults had to have a job. So you couldn't say, I want to be a stay-at-home mum or dad. You absolutely couldn't. And if you didn't have a job, the state found you a job, and that could be window cleaning or rubbish collection or whatever. But you were working. There was no way around it. So the main carers of younger children fell to the older generation, so grandmas and granddads, and they were responsible for shopping, for queuing, for getting food on the table, cooking, picking kids up from school, everything. They took it all on, and nobody knows their story and how important they were. I mean, they ran, grandmas ran Prague, I know this. My great auntie was like, wheeling and dealing on the black market, you know, where no one could get toilet paper, she could get toilet paper. She was, you know, so good. So they're the heroines, and I wanted them to be, you know, the stars of this book.
So it's very much a story about grandparents and grandchildren, isn't it? That in-between generation is missing. Is that deliberate or
deliberate.
Is that significant?
It was deliberate because their story would be a different story, and their memories of these grandparents, their parents, would be a different story. I wanted the grandparents to be the stars, so much so that I wanted the middle generation to be bucked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not their story.
No.
They are in it a little bit. Ludek's mum is in it. But yes, it wasn't their story. They weren't allowed in.
Yeah. We probably should have started at the beginning, because to me the opening, that sort of opening page, that metaphor of the suitcase, the little chapter is called The Suitcase, is so evocative, because this book is full of metaphors and symbols and signs. I just wondered if you could perhaps just read that little opening paragraph and say something about the significance of it as a metaphor, as an image in the story,
sure.
Please.
So this is called The Suitcase. There are suitcases everywhere. They cover the country. Little brown suitcases on trains and on carts. Suitcases strapped to the top of buses. There are suitcases being carried along old country roads by women, by men, dragged by children. There are suitcases abandoned in ditches, suitcases left broken in stairwells. People carry little brown suitcases. Inside, all they can hold, a set of warm clothes, a photograph of loved ones, a treasured book. They carry little suitcases to imagine safety and hope to find a place where they can put their suitcase down and unpack. You must become a little brown suitcase. You must close up tight, protect your most needed possessions, all you can hold. Your heart, your mind, your soul. You must become a little brown suitcase and try not to think about home.
It's such a powerful metaphor, and especially I suppose in the European sense. When I read that, I couldn't help thinking of Europe and the war, the Jews being herded together with their little brown suitcases. It's very much an image of people on the move, people on the run, isn't it? Is that the sort of idea you had?
Yeah, if I thought about firstly, about my grandma having to leave as a refugee, she would have just had a little brown suitcase, that's all she could have taken. And that was, she was leaving forever. Like, she didn't see her family for a very long time, she never saw her mother at all. So what do you pack, what can you take? Hardly anything, just these prized possessions. And then also, of course, the war as a whole, suitcases abandoned on the sides of those suitcases, people carrying all they can in suitcases. Mm. But the suitcases run through the whole book, because there's also the suitcases in the Black Light Theatre of Prague, which were more of a joyous suitcase and a fun suitcase. So you understand when you read the book that suitcases are important.
I was wondering now, if it was a metaphor for now, maybe it would be a backpack, do you think?
Yeah, I think, it's just as relevant now with the amount of wars that are going on, with the amount of refugees that are trying to find safety. Mm-hmm. And all they can take is what they can carry.
Mm. It also links to that other sort of concept that you do explore in the story, which is the idea of what home is. This is a family that's separated, and the family that comes to Australia, it's not really quite home to them. And then the family that stays, in a sense, it's not really home, because I think there's one point where, you know, everything's adequate, but I think you say there's no dreams. So there's sort of something lacking in both senses. The home is an elusive sort of thing. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. So to explain, my grandma and her sister were separated just before World War II. One stayed in Prague and the other went to London and then eventually came to Australia. And both of them had resentments about who had it worse, because my grandma would say, but I left and I had nothing and I couldn't come back and could never go home. Whereas her sister would say, well, I was stuck and I couldn't leave. So they both had, they loved each other dearly. They only saw each other every 6 or 7 years, but there was this resentment about who had it worse, and both of them had a sad story. It was neither of them had got away from that separation and that trauma well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so home also, I don't think we ever leave home, so There's a lot about that in this book. My grandma was Prague my whole life. So she had, she was tall, she had big cheekbones, she wore a big beehive and these late 1970s polyester dresses, and she couldn't blend in because she was tall and textured, a huge booming accent. But the flat was Prague, everything was Prague. I knew that city from the day I was born. Like, it was in that flat. She never left, and the older she got, the less English she spoke. And so her language returned completely and took over, and I felt very comforted by that because I felt like she was going home. She'd already started to go home. I don't think we ever leave home.
And these two sisters, I mean, they sort of span the whole world. They're trying to hold this family together, even though they're separated by so much, you know, distance. But it's the whole struggle to sort of keep everything together, isn't it?
It is. And to keep the young people safe from fear, from want, from all sorts of things. I feel like these two grandmas held up the sky for their grandkids. And I know my grandma did. At great cost to themselves, physically, mentally. I just was free when my grandma was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if you just read that little bit on page 86, that little paragraph, which I think sort of describes very well what you're sort of thinking about home and sort of talking about that idea. Good place.
It is easy to think somewhere else is better. But when you leave home, there are things you miss that you never imagined you would. Small things, like the smell of the river, or the sound of the rain on cobblestones, the taste of local beer. You long to have those things again, to see them, to smell them. And when you do, you know that you are home.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Yeah. There's lots of timelines that move around in this story. I think sort of pretty much from about 1921 to 1981. And a lot of the chapters have those sort of headings of particular years. 1980 sort of is quite a common sort of chapter heading. What's the significance of 1980?
All of my books are set in the 80s. I'm not sure why. I think I'm trying to work something out about my own childhood. Politically, it was an interesting time. Things were getting very dark in Czechoslovakia. Things were breaking down. It was when Russia was breaking down. There was no money. Things stopped working then. There was a lack of food more than there had been in the first part of communism. There was a loss of hope. It's when the 80s is described as the kingdom of forgetting in the Czech Republic. So it was like everybody had to go to sleep and hope that they would wake up in a better time. So it was just autopilot. And it was a lot of people, you know, losing hope was the worst thing, I think. But also the city was dirty, it was polluted, things were breaking down, which my character Ludek loves because he loves the chaos and the dirtiness of the city. But it was a dark time, and that went through the whole of the 80s, and then there was hope by the end of the 80s. But yeah, it was probably the darkest time, but it's the time I remember as well, being in this flat in the 80s. Tennis on the TV and, you know, the phone in the hall with a little table and a much simpler time for me.
Yeah. You learn a lot about the history of Czechoslovakia too, if you read this book. A lot of things that I had been unaware of. There's one chapter in particular, perhaps it's got a key date in it, the 21st of August 1968. I wonder if you could read that chapter and then just tell us why that was so significant.
Sure.
Please.
So this is from Eva, one of the sisters, 1968. It is happening again, and now she's on the street trying to walk fast with her shopping in two cloth bags, and the street is clear of cars, clear of trams, and the tanks roll on and on in a thick rumbling line, cracking the old streets, squealing and shrieking in slow motion. She puts her hand to her forehead, closes her eyes. She tries not to faint, and one of the shopping bags falls from her hand. A jar of gherkins rolls out along the street towards the moving tanks. It does not break. The Soviet flags fly, the huge guns point ahead. "We should get home," a voice behind her, soft, a man, bright eyes burning. He bends down, picks up her shopping. He puts the gherkin jar back in the bag. "Those bastards," he says. "He's young, maybe a student. She is old. She cannot do this again. She cannot fight anymore." "We shall get home," he says again. She takes the bag. She nods, "Home." She starts to walk along the street in the opposite direction to the tanks. It is still early, and the streets are filling with people on their way to work. It seems like no one knows what to think or how to be, but people are pale, people are serious. She keeps on walking away from the tanks and the smell of thick diesel smoke. No one is coming, just like before. No one is coming to save them. The curtain will become solid, made of steel and concrete, and it will not bend, it will not open. They are all stuck inside, forgotten. They must all go to sleep. She keeps on walking. She must get home. Mm-hmm.
So it's a significant date, wasn't it? What was happening in that
day? So 68 was a really big time of folk, the start of 68. A lot of freedoms came back into people's lives. One was radio from overseas, which, you know, hearing music like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix for young people, amazing. There were bands playing, there was a punk scene happening, artists and writers had more freedom, there was more freedom in the press. It was this massive time of hope, the start of 68, and everyone was thinking, great, you know, we're out of this bad period, and Prague can become the city it was, great artistic city, and there will be more freedom and more travel. And then, of course, September 21, the Russian tanks rolled in, and then all those freedoms went, plus a whole lot more. Things got, I mean, there were public executions, there were deaths. It was very serious, and also there was that feeling like before World War II, no one was coming to help this little country. Nobody cared, nobody even saw it. They did, but it was a feeling of isolation that Russia had just claimed them back, and now they really were stuck. So it was a very hard time, especially for people that had already been through so much change.
But the gherkins are in that chapter too.
They are. Yeah,
I think the gherkins are one of the major characters in the story.
I love gherkins.
I wanted to ask you about the style too. Your style has been described as poetic, and it certainly is poetic, and very stripped back. I noticed here and there were some sentences that didn't even have verbs. It was just, you know, lists of words almost.
Yeah.
And I admire that very much. Is that something that comes naturally, or is that something you have to work at?
I work at it. This book I drafted more than I've ever done. So this was a passion book, and I spent 5 hours every day working on this. I didn't want to do anything else. I became a recluse media. My friends hardly saw me. They would know that. And I drafted every scene 12 to 20 times, full drafts, until every single excess word was gone. Which is why it's so short. But it was important to get it, the essence of each bit. I've always worked like that, but this one was even more, it's stripped back even more. But maybe because of the drafting, there's a layer in there. There's more than there is on the page. There's a whole backstory underneath sitting there on every page. And not only just the way I felt and the amount of emotion I poured into this book, but every other character in this book, all their backstories, all the people that came before me.
Mm-hmm. I think it's partly because it's so strong in the imagery too. So it's full of beautiful images, and we've talked about some of them. Like some of them, they are very funny too. I keep thinking about the sisters. I think I can see the sisters with their beehive hairdos, absolutely sprayed hard with hairspray, smoking in the car, and with the windows up, and those sort of images. You know, they're just the sort of images. Images just. I mean, that tells me more about them as characters than describing, you know, what they were like and who they were. That sort of singularity of purpose.
Yeah, there's some universal things. Like, who remembers the 70s in cars where adults were all smoking and the windows were up and you're, like, going green in the back and they're asking if you're car sick and it's just because of the smoke. But also, going to the airport, for some reason, to pick up someone, a relative, the whole family would go and we'd all have to get dressed up. But then there'd be no room in the car, like, to pick up the people. Like, it was just like we'd all have to go and it would be this, you'd have to wear your best shoes and, different times.
Yeah,
but it was a joy to remember those things.
Yeah, yeah.
My grandma wouldn't let anyone open the window because of her hairdo, but she had so much hairspray that she could, like, wake up in the morning and her hair was absolutely perfect, like that Seagull hairspray, the pink one. There's another image that I'd like to say. My grandma used to come in every morning with her sort of girdle half done. She was quite a large lady, checked from all the fat that she cooked and all the butter, and we would have to stand on the couch and pull her into her girdle every day. And it was this joyous thing. She'd be like, pull me up. And we were like, picking her fat rolls into the thing. And then she'd go out and do her hairspray, and it was this full armour then, like, and then her, like, dresses. And then she'd be ready for the day, and we'd go to the market. And this was a daily routine, of going to the market every day after she'd done this whole routine. But, I love her. And she was one of a kind.
Well, I think that's what writers want to do. They want to leave you with a sense of the character without, you know, spelling it out in several paragraphs and describing them, but leaving you with that sort of image that you just don't forget, that tells you so much more than, you know, a page of writing, really.
It also allows the reader to bring in their own memories and into your work.
Yes.
So they might see their own grandparents in this, or, yeah, I hope so.
Those details tell us so much, don't they?
Yeah.
And we were talking before about this Eva, the grandmother in Prague, and Ludek, the grandson. They have sort of quite a formal relationship, except towards the end, and then suddenly they go tobogganing in the snow together, and they shoot off, they fly, and the toboggan breaks up, I think. But, you know, it changes the relationship between them somehow.
Yeah, it does. That scene is a real scene, and my cousin, who has been so amazing, I haven't seen him for 25 years, and he got in touch while I was writing this book just by chance. And he was working in the film industry as a driver, so he had heaps of time while he was waiting for actors and actresses, driving them around and taking them to sets. And he just messaged me and on Facebook Messenger and said, Faye, ask me a question. And he loved it. I'd ask him all these things about his childhood and what it was like at school and what he had for lunch. But he did tell me this scene about how he went tobogganing with his grandma, and it's hard to imagine because she was as big as my grandma, and they marched up this hill with his old sled, and he was really scared, but she said, no, we're going, and they flew in the air, picked up so much speed and flew in the air and smashed down, and he thought she was choking on the ground, and she was laughing, and she was like, we went out with a bang, like, it was like, that was her father's sled, it was his antique. And that smashed it to pieces, so that had to go in the book. But it really was it's a coming of age kind of scene.
Yeah. Something changed between them, didn't it?
He's saying goodbye to his grandma.
Yeah.
And she's letting him go.
Now, there are lots of tragic events, but it's not a dark story at all. It's full of food and dancing and music, and that's what sort of really makes it alive, I think, too, doesn't it?
It is full of music, and it's not going to make you cry from sadness. I think it makes me cry from love, and I feel like I'm at that age where I cry as much from love as I do from sadness, which is nice. So it's a different kind of sadness. It's a different kind of crying. I mean, it's a heart feel. It's love.
Don't worry, you'll cry a lot more when you get as old as me. You cry watching television.
I already do. Don't worry.
It's a good sort of cry. We're sort of coming a bit to the end, and there may be some people having some questions they'd like to ask you, but just before we get to that, I wonder if you could say something about, I think it's referred to a few times, the before everything time in the story. We talked a lot about timelines and how, you know, it does move around in different timelines, but that doesn't sort of matter really, because we learn what happens, you know, through those little sort of different timelines. But there's this little before time thing that comes in. What is that?
Do you mean the little sections from other people? No.
No, I think it's towards the end. There was a whole section there we talked about before that happened and before that happened. There was this other time, like this sort of, was that sort of back before, you know, when everything was okay and before the sisters had to break up?
I see what you're saying. I think I wanted to imagine a childhood for these two women that was free and joyous. So I had them tobogganing when they were young, and I had them as normal children fighting over toys and trinkets and things from their mum. And that was a brief time. I mean, they only had from being born to 16 before things were very serious and they were pulled apart completely. But it was important, and I don't know if that's any of that's true. I don't know my grandma's past at all.
No.
But I wanted to give her that. 16 years of normal childhood with joys and sorrows and heartbreaks and tears and laughter.
Mm-hmm.
So that time before the war, before the Munich Agreement, before communism, before becoming a refugee, before becoming the other, the foreigner, the time before when they were just home.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Look, it's a beautiful story, and it's been wonderful to have the opportunity to talk to you about it this evening.
Thank you. So I'd just like to say that this wonderful human being stepped in yesterday to take this gig because the other presenter was ill. So he read the book yesterday afternoon. It's been amazing.
Now, I'm sure there are some questions from the audience.
It doesn't matter if there are.
There's one there.
Okay.
Thanks, Babel. I'm very much looking forward to reading this book, but I'd also really love to listen to you narrate the book. Do you have any plans to do an audio?
It's already been done, and it's Anne Gowrie Rice, the actress. I haven't heard it yet. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not sure if it's out now. Tessa might know, but it will be soon. I think it's already been recorded. I am okay at reading small sections. It's really hard to go into the studio and read for 3 days. It's really intense. I did a test for When the Night Comes, and after like 3 hours, I really realised that although I can do a short piece, actors are so much better. I didn't even attempt to try and do this one or say I put my hand up. I know I'm in good hands with professional readers, but thank you. I will read small pieces out at all my gigs, and there's lots of podcasts too, some already done, many coming, where I'm reading, so look out for them. I'll be putting them on my social media, but thank you.
It'll work very well as an audio book, I think.
I hope so,
Have you been to Prague?
It's very good. I have, yes. I haven't been for a very long time. The last time I was in Prague, I was 22 years old, Things had just changed over, but it was still raw and dirty, and people still lived in the old city, which they don't now, no one can afford to. And it was just on the change to, like, it didn't have the tourist dollar yet, it didn't have the masses of tourism, the masses of tourists. I didn't want to go back now because of that, because it is so different. So I needed to see the Prague that I know, and the one that my cousin lived in, and the one that my grandma knew. But I hope that it gets published in the Czech Republic, because then I really will go. And my cousin will be very happy. I owe him 1,000 beers, according to him. So that'll be a big, big holiday.
There's another
Thank
question.
You.
Just a historical question. When exactly did your grandmother get out of Czechoslovakia?
Yes, she got out about 2 weeks before the Munich Agreement. So just before Germany took a third of Czechoslovakia, so 1938, 1 year before the war started. And nobody knows why. There are stories that she really did accidentally push over a German spy and her name was taken down. There are other stories. I don't know what is true. You will read what I made up in this based on my feeling. But yeah, thank you.
Anybody else?
I'm going to be signing some books. With the lovely Toppy Books who have come tonight and organised this event with Geelong Libraries. Isn't this the most fantastic room?
Isn't
I would
it?
Like to be here. And also, they colour coordinated the room for my book.
Well, it's been a wonderful experience speaking to you this evening.
Thank you so
much. Thank you for coming.
So much. It's been a wonderfully deep and so very enjoyable conversation to listen to. Thank you both. And thank you, Fable, for sharing with us, you know, the launch of your book into the world. It's an exciting time and we're thrilled to be part of it. So thank you. Yeah, that's right. And that's what makes it very special for us. We do take very seriously our role in supporting local writers. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. And it's a great honour to be part of it. Now the other thing I wanted to, I do want to thank John, thank you again for stepping in. He was very eager to do it, it wasn't very difficult to thank you so much. And so I'm going to come back here in a minute, but what I'm going to do now is present a gift to both of you, and if you can please give them both a rousing round of applause as I do that. From Talkie Books for being here tonight, and of course there's copies of the book to purchase, and Fable, you're happy to sign and chat, which will be great, so we'll be able to do that in a moment. I just wanted to do one little advertisement. Our Word for Word National Nonfiction Festival is coming up soon. The program was launched just last week, so I'd encourage you to please have a look at the Word for Word Festival website, or you can get to it from our library website as well. I'd love to see as many of you as possible come along to that. That would be really great. And finally, just thank you everyone for coming along tonight. Thank you for supporting writing, and thank you for supporting your local library. I hope to see you again soon.